The Dr. Lodi podcast empowers people to think for themselves and teaches people how to achieve optimal health, free from cancer and all other chronic conditions. As a medical doctor, clinical psychologist, nutritionist, historian, philosopher, and the pioneer of what has now become the definitive route for those unsatisfied with the modern cancer treatment system, Dr. Lodi will deliver information that you've never heard before. Tune in and discover what a true second opinion really means, how to stop making cancer, why there is no such thing as diseases, and what you are truly capable of achieving in your life.
Welcome to Saturday Night Live. From now on, I'll be back to Sunday Night Lives. And some of you people are from local from Thailand. And sawadee kap tu kon, sawadee don chao. I'll stop chewing gum. Okay. So here we are. Let's go over the things that we're supposed to say to you. Yeah. So anyway, if you missed the Breast Cancer Breakthrough Summit with myself and Dr. Jen Simmons and other colleagues, the free replay is online this weekend. So just go to drlodi.com/events. And what I talk about is the true second opinion in there, which is a book I'm going to actually finish soon. But anyway, it was a breast cancer breakthrough summit. I'm sure a lot of you saw it, and maybe some of you missed it. But it's worth it because there's a lot of people talking, a lot of people who work in this area, One other thing I want to remind you that is that if you've got CFCs going on in your body anywhere, right now the center here is not going to be open until April. We're looking at mid to late April. But my clinic is 19 years now. We're on our 20th year. So in Arizona, in fact, I'm going there. I'll be there for 6 weeks. Anybody wants to come by and say hi. So I'll be there for 6 weeks and be training a couple of Thai doctors to learn what we do. And it's going to be fun. So, but if any of you are, you or a relative has CFCs, chronically fermenting cells, this is the beginning of every show. I have to clarify this, that we call cancer. Not cancer, because it's not descriptive. It doesn't tell us it doesn't tell us anything. It doesn't explain what's going on. So it's useless. It's just something that fits in their nomenclature. It's their nomenclature. So it fits into their algorithm. They have a place for it in their algorithm. And then the algorithm tells the doctor what to do. So don't think that your doctor's making decisions. They don't make decisions. The only decisions they make are, I don't know what to have for lunch, breakfast, right? So things like that. But you're not supposed to, as a doctor, you're really not supposed to think for yourself. You're not supposed to research and investigate and find out that what you've been told is not true. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to follow algorithms and, that's what they do. Most of them do. And it's very strange, but that's what they do. So, that's why when I talk about a true second opinion, we really all need a true second opinion. You're not going to accept the first of anything. If you're looking for a house, you're not going to just buy the first house. And you might pick a couple different realtors, because they'll have different, maybe they'll have for some one reason or another, they'll like this better and they'll show it to you. And so you need to do your due diligence because you're going to make a decision. And the decision you're going to make when you have been told that you have CFCs is probably the biggest decision of your life. All right. It's really the biggest decision of your life. And it's really important if you have a spouse, a family, or good friends that are behind you, you know, and they've got to be congruent with you, with your feelings. It's so important. I can't tell you how important that is. It's a matter of making it or not making it. And so they have to, your family has to say, they have to respect the fact that you want to do what you want to do and love you for it. Okay. That's what they have to do. Anyone who is going through CFCs already knows that any, when you have a spouse or a loved one, a mother, or father, friend who is against what you're doing, it really, even though you know you're right in your heart, it affects you deeply. And so sometimes it's actually, in order to heal, you need to get away from that energy. And if you have to do that, you have to do that. You can always take a vacation from people and get back together with them. You know, there's nothing, you know, that's fine. People, that happens all the time. But if you need to heal, you need to heal. And people have to support whatever you're doing. And if you want to do conventional, then everyone should support that. It's not, I'm not saying that just with what we do, integrative. But some people just feel more comfortable doing conventional. And if they do, just because, even if they say, yeah, you know, what you're saying sounds good, but, okay. If it's in your heart, and you got to listen to your heart, learn to listen to your heart. If it's in your heart, do the conventional. Then you'll be back, I'm sure, because I'm sure you'll be back. But go do it. You have to do that. Got to follow your heart. Listen to your gut. Listen to your, remember, we have 1 billion neurons in our gut. Okay. It's our second brain. In fact, we may only have one brain. It's just that it's bigger than we thought. You know, it comes from our head down to our pelvis. And then remember, of course, that the heart right here in the middle is generating more electricity. So we've got this heart brain complex that just makes us incredible beings. Right. And in fact, that's how we feel each other's presence. You know, when someone's near you, you feel them. And if they're resonating at your at the same frequencies that you're resonating at, you feel good around them, you know? So, and if they're just, if it's a, like a bad vibe, they call it bad vibes, or your different resonations, just walk away. Right. Okay. So remember the power in not doing. It's probably the most powerful thing we can do. Is by not doing. If all of us were to tell that 1%, sorry, not doing it. We're not going to use the internet anymore. We're not going to do it. We could turn it all down. We have that power. But we won't do it. We won't do it. And so we will march into the chambers or off of the cliff. Somehow we've become very compliant. But anyway, please try, you know, get a chance to see the thing. It's a free replay. It's on my website, drlowry.com/events. Okay. And Dr. Jen Simmons, as you know, she was a breast surgeon, and then she kind of saw the light. And now she works exclusively with women with breast CFCs. Wonderful woman. Very good. Very smart. Very, she gets it, you know. Not, it's hard to find an MD that gets it, you know, so she does. And then, so we're in Arizona, and we've been there for quite a while, and it hums. It's, everything's fine. We've got everything. So you don't have to run here to get your colonic and then run over there to get your massage. It's all there in one place, and all the food's prepared, and then you learn how to make food, and it's delicious. And it's just really, a wonderful experience. So anyway, so, you know, Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, are all at Dr. Thomas Lodi, right? The only one is Twitter or X, which is at Dr. Thomas Lodi, MD. All right, MD. And then the website, as you know, is drlodi.com/live. And now I wish I could see you guys. Yeah, so we call them chronically fermenting. Did I finish that? I didn't finish that. So we call them chronically fermenting cells because that's exactly what they are. They're cells that have lost the ability to use oxygen. And so they, as a fail-safe mode of energy production, they start fermenting. Fermenting is very inefficient. You only get two energy packages from one glucose instead of 38. So it's inefficient, but it's faster. You still, in the same amount of time, you'll get more from that. But imagine you have a high metabolic rate. And that's why CFCs use up so much stuff. They need more of this and more of that, more of this and more of that. So they have more insulin receptors. They have more iron receptors. They have, you know, they just need a lot of stuff because they're doing this quickly and they're dividing and all that sort of thing. So but it's really important that we understand the biology of what's going on so that we can work with it. All right. There's no rationale for going to war against any part of your body. You don't go to war against it. You know, I mean, unless it's a parasite, you go to war against a parasite. You got a snake crawling on you, you go to war. But I mean, other than that, you don't go to war. The parts of your body are doing whatever they're doing. For example, the war on diabetes, what would that be? What would I do? Would I like try to like shoot every sugar molecule in my body? It's weird with the war. We always have, you know, it's such an American thing. You know, the war on drugs, the war on cancer, the war on, what else? I don't know. What else are we warring on? Looks like right now we're getting ready for a civil war. I don't know. Dust, you know, I'm way over here. I don't know what's happening, but from what I can see. So, hello. Oh, hi there. We spoke earlier this week. Great. Fantastic. All right. All right, you guys. Okay. So, let's get into the questions. Okay, so the first questions are have to do with parasites. I thought I answered everything on parasites from that webinar, but anyway, yeah, okay, I'll answer these. But you know, I wanted to mention something first. We've talked before about mammograms, and in fact, I talked about it with Dr. Simmons on her show, it's pretty much the consensus of anyone who has got a brain that is actually working and not just following orders, that it makes no sense. Not only it makes no sense, it's deleterious to your health. You know, you're squashing sensitive tissue. Breasts are sensitive. You know, for men, they think their testicles are sensitive, and they are, of course, but women, their breasts are very sensitive. If a woman gets punched in the breast, that hurts more than getting punched in the arm. It's very sensitive tissue, and it has to be because it's for babies. That's how they live. That's how they survive. It's a very important aspect of a mother's anatomy and physiology. So anyway, they take this tissue, which has got, ducts, little sacs that produce milk, ducts, and all kinds of ducts that carry the milk, and then nipple, and then it's got fat and connective tissue, all right? And they take it and they squash it until it is painful. Then they send in ionizing radiation, the kind that causes CFCs. They send that in there. And they're claiming it's not enough to hurt. Well, it's not enough to cause anything, but there's been like a 1,800% increase now in DCIS. So that's the other thing. So we're finding that DCIS is, like if you have lobular carcinoma in situ, LCIS, they go, well, that's stage zeros, and there's nothing to worry about. I mean, it's not CFCs yet. DCIS is also, it's in the duct, ductal carcinoma. It's in the duct, but they say a stage zero, but we better do something. What they wind up doing, the standard of scare is that they take off, you know, they want to do a mastectomy, so they want to do, you know, sometimes, so you, once in a while you'll find somebody who says, let's do a lumpectomy, which is called conservative, breast saving, breast sparing, but they usually want to do a mastectomy, and then some people do a bilateral mastectomy to prevent metastasis from the other side. So anyway, I just wanted to bring this up because it's very important. A lot of women are doing it. It's increased. It's gone from, what was it? It was 2% of the people, of women who had breast CFCs were getting double mastectomies. That, you know, like in 1998. By 2011, 33% of women who had benign, I'm not benign, but I'm just saying very early stage, one or two stage bilateral mastectomies. You know, so there was a very interesting article published and published in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association. And they took a look at the name of the study was Use and Mortality After Bilateral Mastectomy Compared with Other Surgical Treatments for Breast Cancer in California, 1998 to 2011. All right. So, you know, and then about 33 or 40% of the women were under the age of 40. And they had stage zero or one, and they had both breasts removed. You see how powerful fear is? And then, of course, you know, in what was it, 2013, there was the headlines because Angelina Jolie, who tested positive for BRCA, had her breast prophylactically. She didn't have any CFCs, prophylactically removed, and I think her ovaries and uterus. You know, and as I've mentioned before, we've also, if you have that BRCA, if you had both, if you only have one from one parent, you don't have the other one, you're still not full blown BRCA. You're fine. And all you gotta do is live a healthy life. Yeah. They don't tell you that, do they? But anyway, they got her, so she removed everything. But you know, it also increases your risk of pancreatic and colon CFCs. You certainly can't have your pancreas and colon removed. I mean, anyway. So now, and this thing with Angelina Jolie, even though she tested positive, 95% of people, women who have breast CFCs are not BRCA positive. So that means if you are BRCA and you do get it, you don't know if you would have gotten it anyway. You don't know if it was due to that. And the reason I say that is because, and I can say that very, very confidently, is that we know that CFCs are not genetically driven. It's not a genetic problem. Genetic instability results because of persistent substrate phosphorylation. Oh, what does that mean? Okay, so genetic, the genes get kind of unstable. Right, they get unstable because the cell is now engaging in fermentation, right? And that just changes everything. It changes the energy dynamics and everything. Okay, so there's some instability, and we can get some down, you know, changes. But no, mostly, what happens in genes what happens to the genes in CFCs is that they are turned on or turned off. They're not eliminated. You don't lose a gene, right? So your P53 gets silenced, which is the gatekeeper of the genome. It's what they call a tumor suppressor gene. It gets silenced. So does P21 and so does PTEN. A lot of those get silenced, and the CFCs do that. They silence them. And there we go. And then it'll activate other ones, and so you have a whole different, like the genes that are being expressed are now on this successful CFC, It's because it's changed its metabolic program, the way it metabolizes, the way it works. It's changed everything so that it can grab more glucose, and it doesn't need certain enzymes because it doesn't use oxygen now, so it doesn't need as many antioxidant enzymes. And so anyway, that's how we do our metabolic therapies, is because we know that. So we call them CFCs, and that's what they are, CFC. They are chronically fermenting cells, okay? So now, but what I wanted to tell you about the study is that, so 95% of the women with it don't have the BRCA. So yeah, maybe the BRCA has an increased chance of it, especially if you live a normal life. But they've never looked at any study of somebody who's got a BRCA and lives a really healthy life. I'm going to tell you something. I have a cousin in Florida, and she had a child who had Down syndrome, and low functioning Down syndrome, and he'll never be able to go to school. He'll have to be like at best in some sort of very special school. She fed him like raw food, raw vegan food, green juices, from the time he was little. He became a high functioning Down syndrome. He graduated high school in a normal high school. The reason I'm bringing this up is because Down syndrome is actually a mutation. It's actually a mutation. There's a switch in the genes there. Whereas what's happening with CFCs is not mutations. Mutations can happen down the line, but they're not the cause of it. I mean, you could get irradiated. That's one of the things that radiotherapy does, is it really causes changes in your DNA, and that, so you can develop a CFC through mutations, but the vast majority don't happen that way. All right. So, but what did they find when they did this? I'm going to tell you the findings of that study. They did. How many women did they have? They had 189,734. 189,734. That number is significant. That means that the data from that, the data we can derive from that number of people, we can pretty much say is probably valid, right? Here's what they concluded. Bilateral mastectomy surgery maximally reduces the risk of a breast cancer patient developing a completely new breast cancer on the other side. But it does not affect the potentially life-threatening risk of the known first cancer damaging other organs in the body through metastatic spread. In other words, what you did is you prevented it from possibly showing up here. But that's all. That's all. Now, it still can go anywhere, and it will go anywhere. And if you look at the data, that doesn't help. In the long run, it doesn't help. It doesn't increase survival. It doesn't increase anything. It's not a better lifestyle. And so what they were comparing this to was to women who just had lumpectomies. And some of them had radiation in the lumpectomy. I don't ever recommend radiation on soft tissues, especially breast, because it's right near the heart or it's right near the lung. And I just don't, it's not necessary. So the three surgical options were bilateral mastectomy, a simple mastectomy, or just a lumpectomy. It says, by comparing all three surgical options for a patient with early stage breast cancer, we found no mortality benefit associated with bilateral mastectomy compared with breast conserving surgery, which is a lumpectomy. And we found a higher mortality associated with the unilateral. So if you had only one, if you had just the breast, just a simple mastectomy, it's not simple, there was a higher mortality rate than even that bilateral. But the bilateral was no better than the lumpectomy. That's important. And you got enough women. I mean, 100, almost 190,000 women, just a few patients low, below that. Okay, it's published in the Journal of American Medical Association, September 3rd, 2014. You can find it. I'm just telling you, okay? So I don't make these things up. If I could show you, I would. If I could show you the research article, I would, okay? So, all right. I just wanted to bring that up because it had been on my mind. So purchased the parasite cancer presentation and went through the various antibiotics. Could Dr. Lodi now suggest how to take these medications? On an empty stomach or with foods, fats? Okay, that would be helpful. Yeah, listen, and this is for Jane. Hi, Jane, thank you. Yeah, it's the presentation, I know, was probably too much information, right? So you might want to watch it again a couple times. But, that's a good point. I didn't say that. So really, it turns out that niclosamide, for example, needs to be, you get a better absorption with no food. Ivermectin, it doesn't matter. None of the other ones really matter. The only one that matters is fenbendazole. You get a better absorption of that with a fatty meal. And that doesn't mean you have to eat the fat off of a cow. You know, you can eat a bunch of macadamia nuts. You can eat an avocado. Okay, fatty meal that's what that is. Okay, seeds, nuts. But other than that, the rest of them, with or without, and including the antifungals, unless you get nauseous. Some people have a weaker stomach, and if you have a weaker stomach, you know, if you get easily nauseated, if this kind of thing would make you nauseous, then yeah, definitely, then eat food first. Okay. But as long as you're taking it like three times a day, you're still going to be getting the blood levels. Remember, it's the consistency of doing this that's important. All right. It's the consistency, because these little guys are, you know, they look like complete aliens. They're in a whole new, they're in a completely another dimension of existence than us. And we're the required environment and nutrient sources. That's what we are only, right? So they're going to live. They're going to survive. They're very good at it. And they already know how to tell the immune system to shut up and go over there. Don't look at me anymore. And it does. Okay, hi. Another question is, I have never done a gallbladder cleanse. After listening to your parasite webinar twice, I heard you mention a gallbladder flush. I hope you can put the instructions up on your resources somewhere. It'd be a good idea. I have been advised to do an ultrasound of the gallbladder to make sure there are no large stones in my gallbladder before doing a flush. I am in Australia, and I'm going to get a doctor I know to write me a script for the parasite protocol you gave us. Thank you. All right, so this is from Kylie. Here's the thing.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Alchemy of Natural Healing. I'm your host, Laurel Dewey. True healing is an alchemical process, meaning it must transform you on all levels, body, mind, and spirit. What affects one affects all three. True healing is one of the hardest journeys you'll ever travel, but it's one of the most rewarding and fulfilling when you get to meet yourself for the first time. If you're ready to take that journey, let's get started.
There's a very well-known gallbladder flush out there, and it's been, you, and you, And of course, all the alternative doctors have their take on it. They change it a little bit, but basically it's all the same, right? It's some form of malic acid, which softens up the stones. Malic acid is found, there's a lot of it in apples. So one of the ways you can do it is you eat apples, nothing but apples, or drink apple juice for 3 days, 4 days. And then you've loosened it up. But now you can actually get malic acid capsules and stuff, you know. But that's the whole idea is to soften them up until you get to about day three or four. Then you drink some sort of Epsom salt. I don't know if you've ever had Epsom salt, but it completely saturates the bitter receptors on your tongue. Okay, they're bitter. It's bitter. It's because it's magnesium. So anyway, it's really hard to swallow. You can put a little bit. Anyway, you drink like a glass of Epsom salt. And you put, I forget, two tablespoons in there. I could put it up, but I don't recommend it. That's why I didn't put it up. And then you drink a cup of olive oil and you lie on your side, on your right side. And of course, what happens? That olive oil stimulates, which oils do, it will stimulate your gallbladder to produce, to squeeze out bile. And it will, and, but it's a lot. There's a whole cup of olive oil. So it's a lot. It's a big stimulus. And whatever comes out is, usually a lot of stones. So they come out and you do get a good result. Most people get a good result. And then a lot of times you have to get up and after a while, get up and do an enema, or you can keep drinking it. There's actually different versions of the same thing, but it's all based on what I just said, you know? So, you know, there's something called the flush, and they say, step one is take malic acid every day for 6 days. Starting on the sixth day after taking the malic acid for 6 days, you start the flush. And the flush day, you eat lightly until 2 p.m., avoiding greasy food. Now you can start making your Epsom salt solution. The solution aids in widening the gallbladder and liver ducts to make it easier for the stones to come out. Measure 4 tablespoons of food-grade Epsom salt in 3 cups of water. All right? And then you can add some vitamin C to it. Anyway, that's a lot. You're probably going to clean them out of a lot. And that's all that. So if you think you have gallstones and all that, you might consider that. They use with the olive oil, could be grapefruit as well. But unless you think you have gallstones. Now, if someone told you, Kylie, to do an ultrasound before you do a gallbladder cleanse to see if they're 5 centimeters or more, does it? Listen, if you soften them up with malic acid, you know, you're not going to get hurt from this. I don't know why you need to do gallbladder. What I really am more concerned about is the liver. The liver does two things, two main things. It does, makes bile. And the other thing it does is it detoxifies things. So it's that part of the liver that I'm talking about, is that the detoxification part, not the bile producing part. So bile and the formation of bile of gallstones really depends on multiple things, on the pH of your blood, on the amount of things you're eating, how much most of them are cholesterol. Just like when you pour salt into a glass of water, right? It'll dissolve until you get to the saturation point. Then you'll start to see the salt gathering. It starts to crystallize there. And that's what happens in our bodies. So you just got to add more water. In other words, you got to get more hydrated. You do a couple cleanses, and those gallstones will go away naturally. Yeah, but if you're already in a place where they're obstructing and you're having pain, then you can't even do the gallbladder flush. Then you're going to have to go into one of the surgeons. So, really good way to avoid all this is just to eat healthy human food, and you won't have to even worry about this, because these aren't things that are just happen, right? They're caused by certain things. So the point, what I wanted to do, right? So then they've got this, I mean, this one, you know, they have you doing this before 9:45 p.m. and then this one here, olive oil drink at 9, and then at 10 p.m. you drink the oil, and then, my God. And then after 20 minutes, you go to bed and rest. The following day at 6 a.m., and you drink another 6 ounces. Whoo, 2 hours later, drink another. It's a heavy duty thing. There are simpler ones. You can find them easy. Just look online. But they're all based on the same premise of the malic acid, olive oil, and Epsom salt. That's basically it, right? Now, what is more important is to protect the liver. Okay. Now the liver, your liver will regenerate. You know how, you know, people that have tumors in their liver and then they cut out part of the liver, it grows back. People that donate 2/3 of their liver to a sibling grows back. It's a very regenerative organ. So it's going to get stressed taking all these antiparasitics and antifungals. Yes. And then that's why you're going to do 3 weeks on and 1 week off. How long are you going to do that? I'd say minimum of six cycles. I would, to just make sure you get them all out. If you get sick from any of them, then you stop that one particular one, right? And you probably want to work with a doctor or some sort of practitioner who knows what they're doing. And I need to compile a list of those guys and girls so that we can have a parasite group, parasite, because parasites are a big deal. So, but anyway, alpha lipoic acid, 400 milligrams 3 times a day is fantastic. Since alpha lipoic acid uses up B1, you don't want to be deficient in B1. So you take a B complex once a day. That's all. Silymarin, which is from, it's a plant, 400 to 500 milligrams 3 times a day. Or if you get just the active ingredient in silymarin, which is called silibinum, you can do 200 or 300 milligrams 3 times a day. All right. So they come from the milk thistle plant. It's a milk thistle. And some people make teas with the milk thistle. But I mean, if you want to get down to the active ingredients for liver regeneration, that's that. And then phosphatidylcholine, which is a phospholipid, which is, remember, our membranes of our cells are made up of phospholipids. So, and this is one of the main ones. And so by getting extra, this really helps cells heal. It's very good. And then, of course, take at least 400 micrograms of selenium a day. Try to get it in a chelated form. It's better, like selenomethionine. 4 Brazil nuts gives you 200 micrograms. So you eat 8 Brazil nuts and make some Brazil nut milk. You got lots of selenium. Yeah, all of that is really good for the liver. And the other thing too is on that week off, maybe the first day do a juice cleanse. Don't eat, or water fast for 1 or 2 days. You know, give everything a break, or a juice cleanse. You don't have to, but I mean, a lot of people don't. Most don't. But I'm just saying that's it. I'm not so worried about the gallstones, unless that's already a problem that you have. All right, so now here's Patricia. What is the name of type of dewormers for people and kids? What do I have to expect when my kids are under the treatment? Also, the dewormer kill the parasites before they come out. They're stool or alive. What diet? Okay, maybe you didn't. I mean, I guess you didn't get a chance to see the webinar. Right, so there's several different, don't just call them dewormers, because Parasites are worms, and they're also protozoa, which are single-celled organisms. Right, and so there's different kinds of medications for those, and different kinds of medications for the worms. So the worms are called helminths, and I don't know why they call them. What a stupid! Who came up with that name, helminth? Helminth. So it's like not fun to say, not fun to hear, not fun to write, and not even fun to know that it exists. And it does. I've got to use it all the time. Can't believe it. Anyway, there's a lot of them. There's ivermectin. There's the benzimidazoles, which are albendazole, metbendazole, and fenbendazole are the main ones. There's other ones. And then there are niclosamide and praziquantel. They pretty much get the. You don't need all of those. Depending on your situation, so you need to work with somebody who's experienced with this. Then you need something like tinidazole and nitazoxanide, which is also called Alinia, to get the protozoa or metronidazole, the protozoa. And there's a lot of protozoa, like toxoplasmosis. There's all kinds of protozoal parasites, entamoeba, chlamydia, not chlamydia, what's the other one that women get? I always forget that. Why do I blank on that one? Always. Where is this? Okay, so what diet? Now, what diet? The diet you should always be on is the same diet, really, which is a healthy diet, which is earth food, food that comes from the earth. The earth made it, so you know it's good, right? That's not always true, right? I mean, earth makes that mushroom called Amanitis phalloides, which is not very good. You eat that, and you're probably got 48 hours and you'll die of liver failure. Yeah. That's called a death cap mushroom. You don't want to. So not everything the earth produces is good for you, but if everything exists for something. So since we're so divorced from nature, since we grow up, since we live in such artificial, ridiculous worlds, we don't even know what food to eat. We go into the jungle, we go into the forest. We don't know what we can eat, do we? Well, kill me a bear. All right, go kill yourself a bear. Remember, you don't have any guns, just you and the bear. Come on, let me see this. I want to see this. I got my gun. Oh, okay. All right. Proud of you, man. Proud of you. And you're going to have to do what? Oh, squeeze your index finger. Oh, my God. Well, you go through that much trouble. I think you deserve to eat this, the corpse. I know I'm being facetious, but you know what? Am I being rude? Well, you say, let's turn that around. How rude do you think it is to the animal? Think about it. Kind of rude. I know you like living, but hey, I like the way you taste when you're fried. So I'm gonna kill you, or I'm gonna pay that guy to kill you. All right. So that's not rude. I think that takes rude a little bit higher. So if I have to be rude to get people to hear things, I will. I'm just talking about being peaceful and loving each other and taking care of each other. And our animals are part of us, you know. They're not here for, they're here for us to love. They teach, animals teach us how to love. They teach us, they're wonderful. I mean, and they're so pure. They're pure. They're like little kids. There's no agenda. It's just they're present. They're really good for us. And we should love them, not eat them. I don't know. I guess I'm an old hippie, I thought we were really going to I thought we were really going to, it was a new, the new generation was going to change the world, and it didn't. It didn't. Our generation produced Bill Clinton and George Bush, so what can I say, you know? And what's his name, Cheney? I mean, he was our generation? No, he was older. But anyway, but still, I mean, yeah, very disappointing in that. Only a few hippie, real hippies in Canada. But it's not just being a hippie. It's also being ahimsa. It's looking at, let's pass our way in this lifetime by not cause harm to others. That's not what, yeah? It's a good idea. I like that idea. And if we all had that idea, we wouldn't have problems. So, anyway, so the diet should be a diet of uncooked vegetables. And you can, if you want to eat cooked vegetables, eat cooked. But try to keep them to down to 20%, 20% steamed and stuff like that. Just remember, when you're eating the brassica vegetables, that and you, if you steam it or boil it, you will be losing one of the most important parts that requires an enzyme, myrosinase, to mix with the glucosinolate. So if that doesn't have, and the heat from the water will inactivate the enzyme, so you won't be able to get that. So you'll just be relying on maybe the few micro organisms you have in your gut that may have some myrosinase. Excuse me. So what you could do, really, a way to do that is, if you don't like the taste of those things raw, get yourself, get some broccoli sprouts, 2 to 3 handfuls a day. Put them in a smoothie with, you know, nut milks and berries and flax seeds, you know, make it a healthy, wonderful thing, and drink the, and get it that way. Because that way it got ground up, right? It got ground up, so those things mixed and we got the chemicals we need, right? So that's really fantastic. It's really fantastic. So, you know, eating healthy food, it would be my answer to your question of what kind of diet. And your kids, you know, they can get these things, but at lower doses, and it depends on their weight and their activity level. And you got to have someone take a look at your kids and work with you. You know, I can't tell you what they should have, but it's all the same medications. And most of these are safe for children as well, right? I wish I could say more, but there's not much more I could say. Yeah. And then how long, how often? Yeah. If you do, I'd say once a year, because we're all exposed. It's just like chelation. How long should we do chelation? Well, forever, right? As long as we live in this sick world. Yeah. Okay, no more. Okay, come on, let's go. I'm telling you, not the best way to take. Well, I don't know. There's a question here from Anilis. We'll find out the best way to take niclosamide. I have some. I've tried every other antiparasitic. I have biting bugs attacking me. I've been like this for 8 years. Well, listen, I don't know what's biting you, and I don't know if you have stuff inside, any helminths inside or anything like that. But I recommend almost never to take just one antiparasitic. You've got to take several, because you've got to just, and you got to be heavy. So I don't know how many take it. Just take it orally, 500 mil. That's what I do. I take it. I got it right over here. I take it every, yeah, where is it? Anyway, yeah, I take it 500 milligrams 3 times a day, or empty stomach, because I don't usually eat until, I don't usually eat until 3. Yeah, because I don't like to eat during the day, because it decreases my thinking, you know. And plus, I need to have, as you all know, because remember, anything I recommend is something I do. That's why can you imagine recommending something that'd be healthy for someone, but you didn't do it? Then why? Well, doesn't make sense. Okay, just like I recommend, you should drink a lot of juice and water, but I'm not going to do it. That's pretty stupid. Anyway, so I do that. You know, I like to put 16 minimum, usually 18 to 20 hours between meals, right? And I want to get to the point where I just eat one meal a day. And I'm getting there. Yeah. This is a good question you guys might have had, and I hadn't seen it before. Diana, I heard you say once that to correct parasites, you have to take at least three parasites, antiparasitics, to properly get the buggers out of your system. During C19, I took ivermectin only. Do you think that by doing that, I disturbed it and they spread to other parts of my body? No way of knowing. No way of knowing. But it doesn't matter, because wherever they are now, if you could do a full-on parasite cleanse, they're going to get there. So don't worry about it, whether that happened or not. But that's a good point. I hadn't. Oh, my gosh. I didn't. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, I have to answer this question for you. This is a question. It was a dental question. And I know where it is. The reason I'm telling you is that I called Dr. Emma, and I asked her about this. The question was on periodontal disease. That word, I hate that word. Okay, there. I just wanted to get it and copy it over here and bring it over here. Let me get down to here where we can answer your question. Okay, so the question is by by V, how to heal periodontal disease and how to properly get rid of parasites. Well, parasites we've talked about, right? You've got to use all those drugs, 3 weeks on, 1 week off. You can do 4 weeks on, 1 week off. There's nothing magic about three. Okay, if you got liver pain or something, you need to check your liver enzymes, but you work with a practitioner, find somebody. Like me, who gets it. Yeah, good luck. I've been looking for people that takes a long, it's pretty hard. Anyway, so now, but periodontal disease, what are we talking about in periodontal disease? We're talking about the gums around the teeth. Now remember, one of the things that is that the gums follow the teeth. So if they start receding, there must be something going on with the teeth. Now, usually what we see is that the gums become chronically inflamed, right? And what did Dr. Emma say to me was, what she does is, in general, she uses, she thinks that the connection is gut, which, you know, I agree 100%. Gut, we have a dysbiosis in our gut. It gets, our gut and our mouth, and it's all, we're all connected. I mean, even vaginal and rectal microbiota might be somewhat different because they're eating different foods, but, and they have different proportions. So the ecosystems in each system are in each location are a little different. But the mouth is pretty close, right? Because the mouth gets a lot of stuff from the GI tract, but the GI, it leads to the GI tract. But remember, then you've got all of these spaces in your mouth that are without oxygen, called anaerobic spaces, and got a lot of anaerobic bacteria in there. So anyway, the ability to digest, to have a healthy gut, right? Which is, you got to work on. You got to heal your leaky gut. Who's got leaky gut? Everyone you ever met. Okay, it may not be leaking to the point where they're aware of any problems, but it's leaking. Why is it leaking? Because what do we do? What do we do? Not all of us. There's probably about 0.001% of us who don't. But the rest of us eat too much volume. We eat it too frequently. And most of it's not even really food. Anyway, what that winds up doing is stretching out those tight junctions between the cells, and then you get what's called leaky gut. So you got to repair that. And you can use glutamine, you can use aloe, you can use juice cleansing, you know, let it rest. It needs to rest. There's all kinds of formulas to heal your gut. You got to heal your gut, and you got to put in. You got to make sure you have this little microorganism called Akkermansia, who's his job. They're both male and female. They went to gut lining construction school. Yeah, they graduated. I mean, they're like top of their class. They fix the gut lining. Okay, so that's their job. So you got to have more of those. So you get those in. But you know what? If you don't feed them, they're not going to stay, just like anyone else, right? So just to give you a hint, they like to eat pomegranates and cranberries. I'm sure there's something else similar that they would like. Yeah, I have to look that up. But I mean, just keep that in mind. They like to eat that. Because you've got them in you. You just might not have a lot. So you got to get those. You got to get the gut healed. Right? You got to get it healed. Then you want to keep putting in healthy, good probiotics, right? I always go to Ultimate Flora just because they have 150 billion and 40 species, and it's got to be refrigerated. So I'm always open to find a better source, you know? So, that's what I do. And that's really an important thing to do. So if anyone's got a really good source for that, please let me know. Also, you know, I haven't, I don't know if you guys, everyone knows that we're opening a center here in Bangkok and then one in Phuket, looking for a few people to work with us. So if you know any certified lymphatic therapists who know how to use the wands, we really want that. And I think we got our health educator taken care of. She's our original lady is coming back to us. That's probably the main one. But if you think that anything you want to do, that anything you think you could offer, because it's going to be a full-on healing center. It's beautiful. So anyway, certified lymphatic therapist. And by the way, you guys, lymphatic therapy is so important. I don't know how it's not recognized as such. It doesn't get the recognition, but your lymphatic system is part of your drainage system. And if it gets sluggish, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. You can't make it. It cannot get sluggish. Just like your blood can't get sluggish. You know? So what Dr. Emma says is, you know, the ozone, which oxygenates and ozonates, ozone also kills microorganisms. And like we talked about, you support the microbiome. You've got to deal with your lifestyle and bad habits. You know, are you going to bed late? Are you living sedentary? You know, it's lifestyle. Remember, the mouth is part of the body. You can't, it's not like, you know, we think the only thing we have to do to our mouth is brush our teeth every day. And that's it. We've taken care of it. We have to realize that the time I go to sleep is going to not only affect my brain, it's going to affect my mouth. All right. And then they have dental cleaning She's got some very special things that she uses for dental cleaning that don't hurt. Because you usually go to the dentist, you go get your teeth cleaned, and it hurts. She doesn't hurt at all. And she has a lot of laser-assisted therapies. It turns out that there's a lot of people that are nasal breathing instead of, or mouth breathing instead of nasal breathing. And they're mouth breathing because they're not getting enough oxygen through their nose. So they have an airway problem. And that airway problem disturbs everything, disturbs everything, you know, the bones, the oxygenation to your body, all that sort of thing. And people don't get a good night's sleep, they don't get a restful sleep, and it's a major, major problem that's unrecognized. Okay, so that's very, very important. The other things you can use for gingivitis or periodontal, hydrogen peroxide. And you just get 3%, wix it, don't swallow it. it fuzzes up on you. So, and then baking, you can use baking soda too. Yeah, that's good. But essential oils are good. And then sometimes periodontal disease can be associated with trauma, a traumatic bite. So if you've got a traumatic bite, which is directly connected to your TMJ, and clenching or grinding. By the way, one interesting thing about parasites is sometimes they're the cause of people grinding. They don't realize it. Isn't that interesting? It's not, it doesn't have to be up there. So the body is so interconnected. But anyway, those are the things. And then the other thing is the chronic low-grade inflammation that you'll have on your teeth if you've had bioincompatible substances placed. Like if you had a filling, a cavity filled, and that was filled with okay, it wasn't mercury, but it was some sort of plastic ceramic, and but it wasn't compatible with you. So a biological dentist should test your butt against over 2,000 dental products and find out which you're not compatible with, if any, and don't use those. So because otherwise, anything in there will cause like a root canal. Anything you have, extract a tooth with a cavitation, or anything you've got going on in there. That's not compatible, it's going to cause inflammation, healing, chronic inflammation that you're going to get red and all that. So that's it for that answer. Okay. Okay. This is from Mara, and she said, should any supplements be avoided when taking high dose vitamin C or when taking a liquid liposomal C? Nope. Nothing that is contraindicated. Liposomal does give you higher absorption capacity, but make sure that the liposomal is carrying in it, in the liposome, it's carrying sodium ascorbate, not ascorbic acid. You want sodium ascorbate. So what I would recommend is you get pure sodium ascorbate powder, put it like 2 teaspoons, which is 8 grams, put it in a jug of water, sip it slowly 7 to 7, because you can only absorb 200 milligrams at any one time. And then periodically throughout the day, take one or two liposomals. Because that gets absorbed through another mechanism, through your lymphatics, through your lacteals and your lymphatics, completely different. You know, and that is just, you know, get too much vitamin C? No way. If you ever wanted to take the time and read about how important vitamin C is, you would be blown away. I'm blown away by it. I mean, if I'm going to write about it, I don't even know where to start. You know, it's like, wow. But so was alpha lipoic acid. All right, so this is from Maja, she's saying, I have some kind of mucus mold biofilm tip, ropeworms-ish in my diaphragm, pancreas, ribs, liver area. It feels like it's stuck, hurting and fermenting. Where can I get help getting it out? I don't know if it's in the colon or outside, but feeling it's so intense, like under the skin. Wow. Well, okay, so listen, Maja, that sounds very intense. I, you gotta find someone to work with you. You know, I have no idea what's going on with you. I mean, I don't know what else is going on. I don't know the condition of your liver or what's going on. But I didn't really get from that that you feel like there's worms crawling in your liver and your diaphragm. How, you know, that you feel them here or you feel them just, you know, so you could easily do really strong anti-parasitic cleanse. You know, you get started with that. You've got to find a practitioner. Now, I don't know where you live, but you got to get to a place where you can find someone that'll help you. If you can get to St. Louis and go see Dr. Simon Yu, do that. If you can, you know, I don't know where you live. Where do you live? I don't know. Where do you live? Yeah, you live, Omaha. I don't know. DK. What is DK? Is that Denmark? I don't know what's available up in Denmark. I don't know Scandinavia. I don't know if there's a lot. I don't know if it's very easy to get this stuff up there. You got to go. Listen, you sound like you're in sick, big enough suffering that you want to go get help. If you come to the U.S., I'd be happy to see you. So, but, you know, you can start with doing the standard ivermectin, mebendazole, niclosamide. Those are for the worms. And then tinidazole. And then for the protozoa, and then for fluconazole for the yeast. That's like a standard thing. Wow. Okay, so here's this from Uzma. Uzma, she says, "Hi, I have severe gut and stomach pains after meals. Jejunal thickening, to which is an indication of celiac and chronic mild inflammation of the antrum stomach. I have no gallbladder. Can this be a parasite?" Yeah. Yeah. I mean, jejunal thickening is, you know, due to chronic inflammation. It's being chronically inflamed by something, and that something could easily be a parasite. Sure. Absolutely. And remember, one of the things that these parasites do is their presence disrupts the harmony of the gut microbiota, right? And so that you can't really get your gut back into balance until they're gone. But they could definitely, because thickening and hardening is chronic inflammation by definition. Okay, so you need to figure out, what I would do, if you got this situation right now, I don't know how much you weigh. I don't know anything about you, so I can't tell you what to do. But what I would consider doing, or talk to somebody, or make a call with me, so I know I can see you, look at you on the Zoom, and we could. But if you have, you know, your weight's normal and all that, then we should do, I would do a cleanse, a juice cleanse. I'd actually do water fast if you could. They're easier than a juice cleanse, by the way. But you're gonna let that rest and heal. But we should take the, so maybe do juice, because we're gonna take the antiparasitics first. I would definitely take the antiparasitics, yeah. And the ones that live, that like to live, there's like eight of them that like to live in the, eight or nine of them that like to live in the gut, you know, and most of them are worms, but there are protozoa as well. So, you know, I would get both Alinea and nitazoxanide, and then mebendazole, niclosamide, and ivermectin. And you could add praziquantel if you want it, you know, and then don't forget about the fluconazole, which is the antifungal. Now, does it have to be taken at the end? Is it 3 weeks on with the antiparasitics, and then the 1 week off is when you're taking your antifungal? Yes, you can do it that way, or you could just take them all at once and then have one whole week off, which I think is better. I like that. One whole week off. That's when you do you do a cleanse. You know, you do a nice 2 or 3 day water juice cleanse, or whatever, if you can, or just eat healthy. Like, if you never eat healthy, eat healthy this week. This is Jennifer. I'm 48 with no health issues, no medications, and lipids, cholesterol, and triglycerides have always been normal. I had a wellness EKG at work that said I had a septal infarct. Is that even possible? I know they can be silent, but I have absolutely no history of cardiac issues. I had an echo around 2005 for palpitations that was normal. Okay, so anyway, so Jennifer, You know, the EKG findings that they claim are diagnosed. I mean, is that what they did just from EKG? So you can't the conclusion from cardiologists is that you cannot diagnose a septal infarct from on an EKG, right? Because you know there was a you know, it's got to be that. There's a QS, QRS. So there's a QS deflection in leads one and V6. And then there is, what else do they have in there? One and six is at the deflection. And then, and then the other one was in leads one and six, and then the other one was lead. Because you know when you do an EKG, what they do is they put six chest leads there, and then they put them on your arms and your legs. Okay, and then based on that, they get this electrical pattern, and those are placed at different parts in the heart. So when you're looking at the EKG, you can see the. It's like looking at from different perspectives. All right, so if they try to say septal, so what they say is septal is true some of the times, but other times it's not. And their conclusion was you can't really tell from an EKG if someone had a septal infarct. Now, what is the septum? The septum is that tissue that's between the two main chambers of the heart, the two main ventricles. Okay, so if someone had a heart attack, and it also damaged the septum. That's how a septal infarct occurs. It's not going to happen like just a septum because of the blood supply. So, but you know, they had done the study here, and they said they found that the R wave in V1 was absent in 64.7% of the group. In group A, 60% of the group were group B. The R wave that we're supposed to be, the R wave in V1 is supposed to be a diagnostic. And then the Q wave was absent in 35% in lead one and 64% in lead six. So, and then they couldn't find it. So anyway, so then they did what they call ventriculography to confirm whether or not there was a septal infarct. And ventriculography is where they put a contrast material goes into your heart, and then they take a picture and they can see what's happening, and it kind of allows them to take a picture of the heart, and they can see. So. So, absence of a Q wave in leads one and six, and the QS deflection in V1. It's so not consistent, so inconsistent that you can't really use it. So, if that's all they're saying for giving you this, telling you the word that you have a septal infarct, that's not enough. All right. You could go get an echocardiogram where they could look at the wall motions. They could tell you that's a good way to do it. And then, it's better than, I wouldn't go get the ventriculography because you don't want to have contrast put into your blood, going into your blood, into your heart. So do it that way. Yeah. And, get that. And then if you do, so what? All that means is that, you got to live healthy. You got to live healthy because you don't want it to get bigger. You don't want it to grow. You don't want it to happen again. And there are things called silent heart attacks, and they do happen. And they usually happen in people that are diabetic because diabetics have a tendency to have problems in their really small blood vessels. And so they have a lot of small blood vessels in the heart that block, and they kind of block. And they're what they call silent MIs, myocardial infarction. Silent MIs, and they can get up a lot of this. If you get enough of them, you wind up getting a baggy heart because you've got all these places, the area that's dead. But other than diabetics, silent MI is not really happening. Silent meaning you didn't have pain, right? If you had pain, that's nothing silent about that. Okay, so. Well, okay, so here's one from Jennifer, and a second opinion. She says, I struggle with exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. I take a lot of enzymes and different herbals to help me with this, but I'm still not where I want to be. Do you have any suggestions? Let's assume that this is correct, what's happening. So do they know what's going on? Is it that you're not actually that you're not able to make the enzymes? Or that you can't get them secreted? Because if either of those are the cases, that you can't, that you've got some sort of genetic disability where you don't make the enzymes, or like the ducts are too small. I don't understand the problem, because the only thing you can do is first of all, eat live food, right? Eat food that's not dead so that it has its own enzymes, and it can, and then your pancreas won't have to do all of the work. And that's one of the reasons for eating uncooked food, for eating earth food, is because it's got its enzymes. I mean, everything, like every protein has a protease, every starch has an amylase, every fat has a lipase. Right, and that's because it's auto-digesting, but it's biodegradable, and you leave it on a table, cover it up, and it'll turn to water, liquid, not water. I don't really know your situation, but you know, I'd love to talk to you about it. Jennifer, sounds very incredible, you know. So, but yeah, I would get, you got to take digestive enzymes if that's the case, and eat uncooked food. Make sure, and if it's hard for you to eat uncooked food, if it's hard for anybody to eat uncooked food, it's because you have bacteria, microorganisms living in your body that are used to eating differently. So there's going to be a little bit of a war and a lot of gas produced in the transition from you eating that food to the new food, which is the food necessary to raise the really healthy microorganisms. And that's our goal, is to raise healthy microorganisms. Because once we have a healthy gut microbiome, I don't think we could have any problem anywhere in our body. I think that just might be the answer. It's so important. So you got to take, for now, you got to take enzymes. The company I like is Transformation, because they have a lot of research, what they do. And, I take Digestzyme from them because it has a lot of cellulite. So it's for people that eat plants. Cellulose is undigestible. Only microorganisms could do it. So when you have the wrong bacteria in there, or the different kind of bacteria, different kind of organism, and you eat uncooked food, they produce a lot of gas. So you say, oh, I can't eat this. Not true. You just need to change. You take digestive it. 15 minutes before you eat, you take 2 capsules of pepsin hydrochloric acid. All right. Then you eat. At the end of your meal, you take a handful of these enzymes. Or you can take a little bit in the middle of the meal and then more at the end. And you're going to see that things get down much more quickly. And then again, you can't eat too frequently. At the most, you eat twice a day, like maybe 12 and 4. Because you need all this other time to clean up and to everything. There's all kinds of stuff. So, let me see. This is from Elena, ovarian CFC. In November, in October, I was diagnosed cursed. I was cursed with stage 4 ovarian CFC. See, now here, what you've got to do, so this line here, Elena, never say these words again. You see, in October, on the day you were, you understand, when they say diagnosis, it's actually sorcery. It's actually black magic. It's putting a spell. They say, you are this. Now that's what you are. I talk to people, what are you? I'm a ovarian CFC. I have ovarian cancer. I'm an ovarian cancer patient. No, you're also maybe a mom. You may be a sister, a friend, a work. I mean, come on. You know, they do that and they focus it all on that. And that's what you become. And that's what you think in terms of. And whenever you walk in the door, that's all they see. They don't see you, the human being. They see you, this diagnosis, which is an ugly, ugly thing. Okay. So please don't say that again. I understand stage 4, that's their staging system. And you had some chronically fermenting cells in your ovary. Okay. So you did chemo and surgery and you always felt great. You had no side effects. But currently you're on Lynparza with not so good side effects. Is it safe to take it? I'm on a vegetarian diet, exercise, etc. Well, we should have a consultation. Really, 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 Elena. No, these drugs, that drug, I wouldn't. Do you know that I if we get the consultation, I will show you how in ovarian CFCs especially, but a lot of alpha lipoic acid is amazing. But there's many, many things you can do. There's so many things you can do. No, you don't have to take their drugs and throw away their diagnosis. Stage 4, what does that mean? Do you realize that someone with a little lump on their pancreas or their breast, it's just hardly, you can barely feel it. It took at least 8 years to get there. And while it got there, there's all these little microscopic islands that have gone all over the place. So really, everybody, if you've got stage 1, you've got microscopically stage 4. But it's just that the primary tumor shuts down the ability of the other sites to grow blood vessels, and they can't grow blood vessels. That's what happens. So as soon as you biopsy to poke it or take it out, now they can grow their blood vessels, and they do. All right, so forget their staging. Their staging remember, a breast tumor that's in the breast comes through the skin. It's already stage 4 because that's another organ, but doesn't go to the liver, doesn't go to the lung. It's not a big deal, just there. So the staging, you know, that's stage 4, but so is something that's in the colon that went to the brain, liver, lungs, adrenals. That's also stage 4. So it's absurd. It's absurd. It just fits into their algorithm. Okay. It has no meaning or anything. It tells them what they can do, the services and products that they can sell. You know, you guys, I can't get to everything. I'll never, ever, ever not tell you that the first step is your mouth. You've got to get any root canal. I mean, you got to find a real biological dentist. Root canal is taken out. Cavitation is taken out. You've got to make sure your bite is good. You got to make all these things, your airway, you're using biocompatible material. And then you have a good oral hygiene program. You know, you get up in the morning, you do 20 minutes of oil pulling, and then, you know, brush your teeth. All right. So anyway, this is Catherine. I'm an experienced registered nurse that has been researching clinical studies this past year after stage 4 right-sided breast CFC. Despite allopathic oncologists confirming this is a metabolic disease, did they, of my body? No one other than myself seems interested in correcting the underlying cause. So anyway, you done a lot of research and you figured out diet, terrain, good, clean water, removal of toxins, root canals. Good. I hope with real people. You did it all. It's not, some people say they're biological dentists and they're not. Anyway, so you were taking ivermectin, that's the thing. And you were taking, you had read in an article where it was saying taking, forty-eight to 60 milligrams per day for 40 to 60 days, and that should get rid of the CFC stem cells. It's true, but I don't ever rely on one modality. Curcumin. Go into PubMed. Put curcumin and cancer stem cells. Then put vitamin C in cancer stem cells. Then put vitamin C plus doxycycline and cancer stem cells. It's called the lethal combination. Together, it was like 100 times more effective. And then mebendazole of all the benzimidazoles. So when I think of CFC stem cells, and it doesn't matter if it's breast, colon, pancreas, brain, wherever it is, after you've done your cleanse, you know, and you've done your parasite cleanse, then you stay on ivermectin maybe 12 milligrams two times a day. Mebendazole, 500 milligrams, maybe once or twice a day. You stay on, actually twice a day, I would do it twice a day. You do doxycycline, 100 milligrams twice a day. And vitamin C, you do sip 7 to 7. Make sure you're sipping 8 grams, 7 to 7. And that is an amazing combination. Or even go up on your ivermectin if you want to. Go up to 24 milligrams twice a day. But it's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt. People take it for 15, 20 years. You know, 250 people, a million people have river blindness. But those are the ones that actually kill the cancer stem cells. And that's so important because, as we know, that's what spreads. So I'm glad you did that. And I know you did this. You did all this cleansing. I'm hoping that you're consistent. You're getting the colonics twice a week for 8 weeks, then once a week for 4 weeks, then maybe once every other week. You did a juice cleanse, like 3 weeks, no eating, just drank a lot of juice, so you were peeing out of every end. And then when you started eating again, you ate food that grows, that's alive. And you're going to do that for at least 9 months. Until this is all history. Then you go to an 80-20 plan. You're going to find ways to make it delicious, because if you don't make it delicious, it'll suppress your immune system. The biological dentist is, they never should ever use metals. There's no titanium implants. The only implant that they would ever put in is zirconium or ceramic implants. Also, they would never, ever leave. They don't save a root canal. There's no good root canal. They all come out. And of course, all amalgams. So all metals and root canals out. Cavitations out. Cleaned with ozone and or lasers and ozone gas and PRF to fill up the holes. That's what it takes. It's quite an undertaking. If it's got to be done right, it's got to be done right. So if you're doing all of these things and you get the stems, you're going to be in great shape. But as I said, just doing one is not good. I recently did the Greek test. Don't do the Greek test. What is still pushing it? The Greek test, RGCC, is looking at circulating tumor cells and looking at the genetics of the circulating tumor cells and making decisions on you know, what therapies work or not. And it also looks at, I think they're even using now some real time, putting it, exposing it to a substance. The thing is, remember, of any tumor, only 0.5 to 1% of the cells are stem cells. Okay? Stem cells are very, very different, which means if you've got circulating tumor cells in your blood and we draw your blood, we've got a 99% chance of not getting the cells that could successfully metastasize. So it's not, that's not going to help us. That's not what we're looking for. So to do testing on that makes no sense. But if you really want to get tumor sensitivity and resistance, you get a chunk of the tumor, like 5 grams, and you send it to Dr. Robert Nagorny in California. Long Beach? Long Beach. Forget. Brilliant, brilliant guy. And then he tests it in real time against different chemos and stuff. So anyway.
The Greek test.
Problem is, yeah, I'm familiar with the Greek test. Yeah, I stopped doing the Greek test in 2004. So the nearest competent physician is 5 hours away from where you live. Come to Mesa. Come to Mesa. Give a call, Catherine. You know, go at hello.drlodi.com, tell them about this podcast, about this live, and I said, come. You want to, it's really, you're perfect for it. You're ready. Yeah, Samantha is basically saying, she wants to learn what is holistic. Probably a lot of you have that same desire. You know, how do you learn all this stuff? Now there's called the Institute of Functional Medicine. There are different things, but you've got to be a medical doctor first. But there are, for example, one thing I recommend first of all is you go to eCornell, you know, online, and you can sign up for a class called Plant-Based Nutrition. And it's all the science. It's just a science. And it's a 6-week course. It's online. It's not hard. It's about 3 or 4 hours a week. And you get certified in plant-based nutrition. So just to get it's the science. It's got to have science. And you start with somewhere. Start with that. But in terms of becoming like a health coach, it sounds like what might be what you want to do. Liver cleansing and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I don't think, you know, most of them don't know. You know, I would call the Functional Medicine Institute and see if they have programs for people that are not physicians that want to be healthcare educators. I know the Hippocrates Center has health, they teach health educators, but that's all about food. But not what you're talking about. I am going to have a course, an online course, and then come with a hands-on course to teach health educators. So we need a lot of people out there who can help people make the right decision and do the right things. And so, but right now, that's unfortunately it. Leanne, can one get off of prescription thyroid medicine after 20 years and possibly replace with a homeopathic supplement? Yeah, Leanne, I don't know why you're on it. If you had your thyroid cut out and you're making no thyroid hormone, you absolutely need thyroid hormone. If you have not had your thyroid cut out and you're making, and it's just too low or too high, it's just because you have an iodine deficiency. It takes you about a year and a half to 2 years to fill up that iodine deficiency deficit. Then while you're doing it, you need to be taking a natural thyroid medication, such as Thyrovance, Westroid, Armor, okay, where they have T4 and T3. That's what you should be taking. Right. While you're doing that, you'll be taking 20 milligrams, 25 milligrams a night of iodine. And this takes about a year and a half. Then you could start tapering off. Unless you don't have a thyroid, then you can't.
Okay, Susan, I just received an abnormal pap, and these are the final results to be positive, and I'm 48. Is there something we can do other than colposcopy or biopsy? I know you always say that makes CSCs worse. Yeah, listen. Epithelial cells, abnormality, atypical squamous, cannot exclude high grains coming in. All right. Yes, this is good. So
I don't know where you are, but there's a Dr. Zhang, Z-H-A-N-G, in New York City, who is an herbalist. He's like a 25th generation TCM from China. And he went to medical school there, and he's a board certified internist, but he never got his, because of his language barrier, he was unable to get his medical license in the United States. So he's got something for exactly what you need. It's a extract of garlic. It's called allicin, and something he calls watermelon frost. I don't know what it is, but you spray them both on and drench the tip of a tampon. You put it in your vagina every night before you go to sleep, as far in as you can, so it's touching your cervix. And you go do that for 30 days. And everyone that he's, I started working with him in early 2000s. Everyone that's done that has gotten, after that, they go and get a pap smear and it's normal. So yeah, I would say don't freak out. The other thing you can do is vaginal ozone. We've got to get the right vaginal probiotics, get probiotics in there. Change your diet. Yeah, remember, all vaginal microorganisms, they're initiated through the rectum. There's a big nonstop two-way highway between the rectum and the vagina. And it's just, so the only thing different with the microorganisms in the vagina is that they are eating the mucus that's being secreted by the uterus, which is dependent upon hormonal changes. So as the mucus changes, they produce different kinds of substances. It's all amazing. It's incredibly amazing. I don't know how you can go to medical school and come out an atheist. I just don't understand it. It's like, yeah, I don't know how you can be an atheist anyway. But there are so many things you could do. Don't do their stuff. No. We got to get you to Dr. Zhang, Z-H-A-N-G, and he's in New York City. I forget what his first name. His first name is like a QI or something like that, because I think there's other Dr. Zhang's. And make an appointment. Go there. Get it. In the meantime, get yourself some garlic and get peel it and then activate it. Get one of those garlic crunches, activate it, and you can just put that deep inside. Push it in and hold it in, put a tampon to hold it in place, right? And try that too. It's not the same as the extract of allicin, and it might, and if it burns, you won't be able to do it. That's the only thing, it might burn. I don't know if it'll burn. If it doesn't burn, you can do it. Now,
but don't freak out. Listen, they cannot exclude they can't exclude it, but they also can't see it. It's just atypical. What's happening? The cells are just starting to change because they're losing their mitochondria. This is what happens. They're changing. It's not that they didn't come from somewhere else, Now, there is a question here about molecular hydrogen.
And yeah, I don't know. anyway, you've all heard me talk about molecular hydrogen. And let me just tell you a little bit about it. It's again, remember, on the periodic table, if you look at all the elements, they start with one proton, one neutron, one electron, then they go to two, and then they go to three, and they go, and that's what the periodic table is. And there's, what, 106? I don't know how many there is. That's the only difference between, like, one atom and the next. So a carbon and an oxygen, they have a different number of protons and electrons. Otherwise, they're the same thing. Well, the hydrogen is the smallest in the universe, right? It's probably mostly what... It's all made in these supernova, and stars are burning hydrogen, producing hydrogen. So hydrogen by itself is not stable, so it turns into hydrogen gas, which is H2. So H2 is produced in our body, about 10 liters of H2 a day, and it permeates all our cells. Remember, it's so small, it goes through every membrane and everything. It goes into your brain, and it is a fantastic, incredible antioxidant. It neutralizes hydroxyl radicals, it neutralizes superoxide. It's amazing. So, but what else, you know, we also know that that's the thing that happens with exposure to EMF. So by doing it two or three times a day, if you're exposed to EMF, and you can just get the tablets and put them in the water, let it fizz. And as soon as the last tablet floats up, you drink it as fast as you can. Or you can get an oxygen generator, oxygen water generator, and just drink it all day. Some people, you can inhale it as well. And the results with CFC is pretty amazing. I mean, and it's like, it's something that has really been underutilized here in the United States. They're doing it more, I've found, in Malaysia, in Japan. But they were given, you know, when they give people with lung CFCs, breathing it in, they have a much better outcome. Same with ovarian, much better outcome drinking. You can drink it, or you can breathe it in, or you can do both. Some people are drinking it. It's hydrogen. It's not any. It's, you know, everything in your body has got hydrogen in it. You know, and unlike any of the other things that you might put in, it doesn't mess with the hemoglobin, so it can't hurt your red blood cells. I mean, so good that in Shanghai, during the great hoax of 2020, they came up with this device to generate hydrogen, and the people are breathing it in, and they find also that it's it stimulates the production, the increase in your CD8 T cells, which are the ones that are the ones you want to increase, because they're the ones that go get rid of things, kill things. And they also so the reason that's important is especially the ones with the PD-1. Now, we've talked about checkpoint inhibitors in the past, and checkpoint inhibitors are when there's a like a receptor on a T cell that can bind to a T cell, and it kind of blocks it. It's a programmed death ligand. Program death. So it blocks it. It can't. So now the T cell can't go kill the tumor. So these PD-1 and PD-L1 blockers either block the T cell, or they block the tumor. Either one. If you block it, then it can happen. The problem is, if the tumor is not already infiltrated with T cells, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't help. Well, it turns out that this helps. The molecular hydrogen will help that happen. It will increase the likelihood that it's a hot tumor. And so does ivermectin. Ivermectin can turn a cold tumor into a hot tumor. You know, so it's pretty interesting. And so I'm, like I said, in Japan and like Shanghai and Asia, they're working on it. In America, I'm not sure what's taken us so long. It turns out that, you know, when you also see the administration of H2 gas, will actually see the more CD8 T cells that are supposed to kill, the more of them that have PD antigens on them, that means they're going to, the poorer the prognosis, because they're going to stop this T cells, right? Well, the hydrogen gas lowers those, it decreases those. So it makes them less aggressive, less, yeah. So I would definitely do it. Now, Valentina, you got to book a consultation. Contact, go to hello at Dr. Lodi and just tell Fa that I said you have to. They're being pushed into surgery. No way. I mean, you know, I'm not saying you, but the answer is always no. And then, you know, okay. Prove it to me why I should do it. But let's say no for now. I agree with you. Does it help? No. Does it hurt? Yes. When should we do it? There are times when you have to do it. So let's figure that out together. Okay. Yeah, papaya seeds and oil. Superb. Amazing for parasites. Absolutely. And malaria, they, you know, when I was in Vanuatu, that was like one of the locals knew that was a local tradition for malaria. Was papaya seeds. I think they dried them out and ate them. But yeah. So there is a question here. It seems a lot of questions about iodine. Let me just quickly say to you that iodine Wow. So Sherry Ann, wow. What parasite lives in a cyst? Many. They make cysts, especially the, many do. They can form cysts. And happens to be in breast tissue. Well, we know that protozoa like fatty tissue. They like brains and breasts. So I guess when you did a biopsy, after about 20 minutes, you said you felt like you went into septic shock, right? And wow. And you had all kinds of neurological issues and wow, incredible. Well, there's one more reason not to get a biopsy. My God. Anyway, so I'd like to know if you can tell me what parasite I'm taking tox over some other parasite. Severe central nervous system burning. Yeah, so again, I don't know. You're right. Toxoplasma can go to the brain easily, but there are several that do as well. So yeah, you need the whole gamut. Every one of them. Yeah. Ivermectin. Praziquantel, mebendazole, niclosamide, nitazoxanide, and tinidazole, and then maybe a couple of antifungals. And 3 or 4 weeks on, 1 week off, 3 or 4 weeks on, 1 week off, 3 or 4 weeks, and 3 times a day each, and all that. And you got to do that. You got to do that. Yeah, they do live in cysts. That's how they protect themselves. inside of bodies, especially the protozoa, but even the worms, the larva. So yeah, sure. And of course they didn't, they wouldn't know that at the hospital.
Wow, Sherry-Ann. If I can help you, please give me a call. Okay. So, I wanted to bring up, somebody asked me a question here and I can't find it now. It's about DCA. You all know about DCA, and it's a very kind of important thing you should know about. So let me just take a minute and tell you. Okay. Now, okay, so, anyway, I don't know if that's where I am. DCA, dichloroacetate. It's a small molecule, and it was used primarily for, initially for children that are born with what they call chronic acidemia. They have a defect in their mitochondria and they can't process the normal way, and they wind up processing through glycolysis or fermentation. They wind up with a lot of lactic acid. So they wake up in the morning, they feel like they ran a marathon. So they found out that the DCA does it, because the DCA blocks the enzyme. That would prevent pyruvate from going into the mitochondria. So pyruvate can go this way and get turned into lactic acid, or it can go this way in the mitochondria. So it blocks the enzyme that would, it blocks the thing that would not normally, you know, it's phosphodiesterase kinase, phosphodiesterase. Anyway, it's the enzyme. What is that enzyme? Come on. What is that enzyme? Anyway, there's an enzyme that, pyruvate dehydrogenase, yeah. So pyruvate dehydrogenase kinase would block and prevent pyruvate from going into the mitochondria. So now it has to go to the fermentation. And that's why these kids are fermenting all the time and just in pain, because they have all this lactic acid. And they take this and they can go to school. So then really that's the same thing that's happening with the CFC. So how do we do that? So we do. We found out that it does that. It does even more. It even does more than just that. So DCA, I really recommend not only as an IV, but I mean even as an oral. And you can take an oral. And the oral doses are, you know, they range. You know, it's really, you got to work up to it. Like 12.5 milligrams per kilogram, twice a day, then three times a day, then four times a day. Then you can go all the way up to 200 grams per kilogram. I mean, four times a day. You're not going to do that, because what happens is the side effect from this is a peripheral neuropathy that is reversible when you stop, but still you don't want it. But that's kind of your guideline to let you know. But if you realize what it does, it not only blocks, like prevents the CFC from eating, right? Can you imagine that? It does. It does other things. Like, for example, it's involved in cholesterol synthesis. So people that take it wind up with lower LDLs, not lower cholesterol, lower LDLs. So, I mean, if you're interested in that, and Yeah, so they've done with small cell. Yeah, it's just pretty amazing. So, basically, what it does is by it increases oxidative phosphorylation. It makes the cell metabolize the way that's not considered a CFC. Okay. It also decreases the blood glucose, okay, in both fasting and in diabetes. It'll decrease blood glucose. Not only blood glucose, but triglycerides triglycerides. So for cardiac and also for cerebral. So DCA is just pretty amazing. And it's a small little molecule. It's really just an acetate that has two of the places replaced with a chloride, dichloroacetate, DCA. Very simple molecule. But taking it all the time. Now, why would I want to take it every day by CFCs? Because I want to block the cells from eating every day. Every day, not just on therapeutic days. Every day. Let's not let them eat. So, yeah, let's eat a real healthy diet. Let's go to bed early. Let's move around. By the way, you guys, I did the second webinar with Darren, and it should come out any day now. I hope you all saw the one with Dr. Emma. That was an introductory one. We're going to do more now. We're doing cavitations and root canals next, that in detail. It's really important. Please watch it, and please watch Darren. I don't know the difference between podcasts and webinars. I don't really know the difference, but anyway, it's on that. Anyway, you guys, I realize it's late, and sawadee kap, makap, jugan ne. See you next week. Next week I'll be over there.
Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Lodi podcast. Join Dr. Lodi's membership community at drlodi.com, where you will have exclusive access to Dr. Lodi's cancer healing and wellness webinars, a community of health-minded people, healthy lifestyle recommendations, educational videos, and discounts on courses and content. While you're there, RSVP for upcoming events and register for the Stop Making Cancer online course. If you enjoyed listening, please share and write a review.